live.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Laura Mize. Welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. It's Thursday, May 7th, 2009, and we'd like to welcome you to the show. Are you there, Kate?
I am here. My name is Kate Hensler. I'm the Kate of Laura and Kate, in case you're wondering. I'm in a goofy mood already, Laura. I am a developmental interventionist and lucky enough to have worked with Laura for the last 10 years, and she has taught me most all that I know about speech and language development. And we're going to be talking about what's our subject tonight, Laura?
Oh, what we've been talking about the past few shows, but tonight we're going to wrap it up. We're talking about receptive language in toddlers, and that would mean how a toddler understands the words and the directions and everything verbally that he hears. And we've been talking about really specific skills that children need to learn between their second and third year and how to work on those things. And we're going to jump right in tonight. Before we do, though, I want to give a call-in number, so if anybody's out there listening and wants to ask us a question related to receptive language skills or any other issue you might be having with your child with language delays, the number is 1-718-766-4332.
We love call-ins. Done for us.
And if you don't have the DVDs from my website, teachmetotalk.com, you just might be able to snag one of those tonight if you call in with a question. All right, so let's get started with talking about where we left off last time. And again, these are skills that occur in typically developing language by the 2.5 year mark, and children with receptive language delays sometimes have a hard time learning these kinds of things without specific help from their parents or perhaps a speech pathologist. So, or Kate, a developmental interventionist. So we're going to talk about these specific skills. And Kate, I am not going to ask you one time tonight where this skill falls on your test.
Okay, good, because I don't want to have to dig it out. And I hate to give an answer and then find out later I was wrong.
You've never done that.
Well, sometimes I think, well, was it 24 months or 27 months? So.
Oh, you know what? I think we already have a caller. Let me see if I can get him on. Let's see.
Oh, good.
Hello, are you there? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, caller.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. What can we do for you?
Well, I am just calling in. I've been listening to your show, and I know you guys are always wanting people to call. So this is the first time I've actually listened to it live.
Well, we're glad you did and you had the nerve to call in. Do you have a child with language delays, or do you work with young kids with language delays? Or
I have two little boys. My oldest son is Trevor. It's Trevor with a B and not a V.
Oh.
And he'll be 3 in August, and when he started in early intervention, he was overall 90% delayed across the board.
Does he have a specific diagnosis?
No.
Or just
that
delay.
Just cognitive delay disorder, and that actually came from a pediatric developmental pediatrician.
Uh-huh.
And all of his therapists were just kind of like, all right, that gave us nothing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, we don't love those
types.
Yeah,
that.
You can imagine getting that, too.
Yeah. Yeah, we knew he was a little delayed, so what else you got for us?
Yeah.
He's been in the early intervention program now since December we started with therapy.
Uh-huh.
And what
kinds of therapy does he get?
He gets speech therapy, which was the last one that we were able to find a therapist for. He gets occupational, and he gets developmental.
Okay, good.
And it's great because they actually come in and co-treat, so everybody's on the same page.
Uh-huh.
And hold on 1 second.
Okay. Go ahead.
Table, please.
She sounds like she's taking care of kids in the background.
Yeah, I'm getting my
kids
delivered.
So my second son, I noticed the same kind of tendencies where he'd pick up a word, use it for a week, and then just drop it.
Yeah.
And so we went ahead and got him evaluated, too. And he's right around 30%, just barely got into the early intervention program.
How old is he?
He is 15 months.
Okay, good.
And
so you got him started really early.
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, this is where I saw it with my oldest son. So I was able to say, no, I'm not going to do the wait and see like you guys said last time. We're going to go ahead and get him evaluated now. And but yeah, basically, I just wanted to tell you your show is great. I am so far behind in listening that I'm still stuck on the toys, and I've been out shopping a little bit.
Oh,
yeah,
stimulating the economy
too. Yeah.
So,
well, we are so glad you called. Do you know about the website? Have you been to the my website, TeachMeToTalk.com?
Yes, and I'm saving my pennies to get the video, the DVD.
Well, you don't have to save your pennies anymore because you called. I'm going to send you one.
What?
You don't have to save your pennies anymore. I'm going to send you one. I'm going to send you one for free since you were our caller tonight, and we so appreciate that. So
Thank you.
You're welcome. I do want to talk to you, though, and get your question, but I wanted to blurt that out. Because I'm so excited we had a caller. But you'll, after the show, I want you to send me an email to laura@teachmetotalk.com.
Okay.
And tell me, you'll have to tell me which one of the DVDs you want. If you want Teach Me to Talk or if you want the receptive language ones, we have the one that's Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1 and Teach Me to Listen and Obey 2. And if you're not sure which one you want that would fit your situation, you know, we can talk about that a little bit too, kind of back and forth. But I'm just so happy that you called. But I want to go ahead and did you have a question?
Yeah.
I kind of cut you off to kind of interrupt with the whole, guess what, I'll send you one. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, that,
we are loopy tonight.
Really okay. Well, I call that a good night because I'm kind of out of it from a long walk. Is it normal for, because I haven't gotten a chance to listen to the other shows in this series, but is it normal for the receptive language to be more delayed than the expressive language?
You know, that's not normal, because with typical language development, usually kids understand much more than they can say. So, is it normal, meaning is that what happens in typically developing language? No. But is it common for children with language delays? Yeah, we see that a lot. You know, I never have kids, you know, at any given time, I'm seeing 25 to 30 different kids or families, you know, that would be on my caseload at any given time. And that happens pretty frequently on my caseload. So, again, while it's not normal, it's common. And, again, it's not your but it's not your typical pattern. And it's not even really your typical pattern for children with language delays either. And it always just means that even though he can say it, it doesn't necessarily mean that he understands it, and you have got to go that extra mile working with him to make sure that he really understands and comprehends and kind of owns every word or every concept that you're trying to teach. And you can't always use that just because he said it means that he got it. So, and that's, I see kids like that. Kate and I both have kids like that on our caseload pretty frequently, don't you think, Kate?
Absolutely. I wonder, when you say if his when you say his expressive skills, what he says, are higher than what he understands, do you mean the things he says independently without you saying it first, or do you mean the things that he imitates other people say?
These are the things that he'll just spontaneously come up
and that's higher than what his receptive skills come in, huh?
Right. Yeah. He's picking up a lot of new words. His speech therapist is amazing, and she's so excited that I'm listening to your show, and
aww.
You know,
well,
she's looked into it.
What state do you live in?
I live in Illinois.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I thought that 30% sounded familiar. They have kind of a little bit higher cutoff point for services than Kentucky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the baby, when I say he barely made it, they had to sit there and find sensory problems for him to make it into
well,
the program.
Well, good for them.
They're like, he needs it, and if we don't get it, you're already in the system, and we don't want to wait another 3 months, so, you know, does he have any little tendencies?
And don't all eat? So. You're 15 months old. But you know what? That is such a period of rapid development that if he's a little delayed now without intervention and some focus on it, he may well be more delayed in 3 months, you know. So I'm glad they saw the glass half empty, and since it was your second child, you probably were too.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds terrible, but, you know, you have these expectations. I expected to go to the grocery store by now and talk about the fruits in the produce section and things like that. And then when, I finally realized, no, that's not going to happen. You know, the second child, you have the even higher hopes for. Like, this one's not going to, you know, this sounds terrible, be broken. And then he ended up that he has the same problems. And
these kinds of issues really do run in families sometimes. And if you kind of look back on your side or on Dad's side, you probably would, there probably is a history there of other people or even, you know, little cousins or nieces and nephews that you have that have these same kinds of issues too. So sometimes kids just come to us, you know, kind of pre-wired with these problems. So don't beat yourself up about that. And I just want to congratulate you so much for recognizing it in your second son early and going ahead and getting the ball rolling. And now, don't you feel like you're a little bit ahead of the curve because you've already done it with your first child and you've already learned some tricks and learned some ways to help him progress?
I actually have a degree. I minored in linguistics in college at the University of Illinois.
Yeah.
And so when I was taking the biological language courses, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to have kids and watch this, you know. And
yeah,
it's like I got out my book by Pinker, and I'm like, something's not right here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, in cultures where people don't even talk directly to their kids were still ahead of where my oldest son was at that age.
Right.
And I was like, I talk to myself, I talk to him. When he's not in the room, I'm talking to him. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's constantly hearing somebody talking, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that, and, oh, look, Mommy found such and such. And, you know, I'm just constantly, you know, chattering and trying to get a response from him. Oh, honey, do you see this? And I just want to a yes or a yay or something, and I was getting absolutely nothing back. And he didn't even have the eye contact. Yeah,
but
yeah. You know, if I say something like, oh, do you want a cookie? And he'll be like, cake?
Yeah. Oh, well, good. Well, we're glad that he's making progress. And, again, I just want to applaud you for going ahead and getting early intervention started for both the boys and for actively participating in their therapy programs. Because if you're listening to a show like this and if you're digging in the website, you know, I know that you're doing all you can to help them unlock that whole language thing at home.
And you'll love the DVD.
Thank you so
I can
much.
Say that because I had nothing to do with it, but you'll find it helpful.
Yeah, I've been, like I said, I've been looking at it since, I think, October. I've been looking at it. Like,
oh, wow. Well, I'm so glad to get to send it to you. And you know what? Since you just said that, I think I'm going to send you all three. I'm just.
Oh, my. We're going to get more calls, Laura.
Oh, wow.
They're all really good, and it does sound like
I'm
your
so
first
excited.
And your second, you can, you know, they'll all, what doesn't fit the younger one now will fit him later, and your second one's probably somewhere in between all those, so.
Well, at 15 months, I'm thinking that everything can help him right now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah,
well,
and really
the other ones are little, you know, targeting the receptive stuff, and I think really, and I do this all day, every day, but to me, the receptive stuff, working on receptive language skills is not as obvious to me, and I think, I mean, all of them are good, but Laura, you've put a lot of time and effort and thought into exactly how does this work and how can you improve these things, and that's hard information to find, so.
It really is hard to find, and I took a long time to do those DVDs, too. We filmed it, and then I really thought about for months and months and months, how do I want to present this information, what makes more sense, and then I would go back and refilm some sections. So it was a real labor of love, and I am so excited to be able to give you to these to give you these tonight, and knowing that you have two little boys that you can help with that information. So send me an email, Laura@teachmetotalk.com, and with your address, and I will get those in the mail to you tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. I appreciate it.
Thank you for calling in.
Okay.
No problem.
Talk to you later.
I'll keep you updated. Thank
you. Okay.
That sounds great. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, that was a good caller.
I know. That was good. That was very nice. Okay. Well, I am glad that mom, again, I want to just say one more time how important it was that she recognized those issues in her sons, and especially with the second one, just went ahead and got him right in. And I'm so glad those therapists really looked at that child's best interest and went ahead and qualified him at such an early age. That's great.
Right. Sometimes, I mean, I think that happens everywhere, but it's nice when they do that. And it sounds kind of almost twisted to say that, but because the writing may be on the wall with the older one, to just go ahead and recognize, yeah, and like I said, because we raise the expectation so rapidly at that age,
right,
without intervention, he may, you know, more than qualify in a few months, and it'd be a
shame. He may have really ended up,
mm-hmm.
You know, with a big, big gap. It's almost insurmountable, because the thing is, and we've talked about this before in this series, it's not even our little guys that we get in therapy and that we're doing things with and they're making progress, but they have to do double time and triple time to keep up with other kids, because that is such a period of rapid growth. And if you have receptive language problems at 15 months, 18 months, and at 2, and don't do anything to make that better and target those, you know, you're just going to keep falling further and further behind. So if there's a mom out there on the fence about whether you should call your state's early intervention program or have your child evaluated, I want to beg you to go ahead and do that, because I've never, ever, ever heard a parent say, I wish I had waited a little longer, or I'm sorry I did this whole thing.
Right.
You know, that's just something I've never heard people say, but I've heard lots of people say, I wish I had not listened to whoever talked me out of doing this.
Okay, I'll say it. Usually the pediatrician.
Yeah. You know, and that whole wait till he's two. If you have a kid at 15 months that's not understanding basic directions, get your shoes, give your cup to mommy, give me a kiss, wave bye-bye, there's a problem. Don't wait. How many ever more? 9 months more to see if he's going to get it. Go ahead and get help now and have a therapist who does this all day, every day, teach you how to teach him, and your child, again, will have such a better chance of catching up if you do this kind of thing early enough.
All right, Laura, I don't think we've chatted about this, and I'm digressing as usual, but I'm going to let you zip through all this receptive language stuff tonight, so you're going to have to rest up. I just got some information yesterday about the importance of early detection in autism,
mm-hmm.
How critical that is, and how they're identifying it younger and younger and younger, and identifying early markers with autism. And along those lines, they were saying, you know, identifying it even 12, 14, 16 months, how much better the outcome is.
Right.
Primarily because of addressing the social aspect of autism, not only the language, but also the social stuff. So it is so critical. And for those parents who are listening and may have had their child tested and a few number, however many months, I guess in Kentucky it has to be maybe 6 months later, but say your child was 15 months and you had him evaluated and he did not qualify but was a little delayed, and now it's 6 months later and you're thinking, gee, everybody else, you know, who has kids this age, they seem to be talking and mine still isn't, or doesn't seem to understand very well when I ask him to do things. Go ahead and have him reevaluated, because sometimes it's a matter of just a month, you know, age-wise, because of the way the tests kind of are laid out.
Right.
The expectation goes up significantly when a child goes from 24 months to 25 months, or from 18
right.
to 19 months, or, you know, those key ages. So it may be that a child who wasn't delayed at 18 months may be delayed at 19 months, which I know is goofy.
I know. Well, sometimes, you know, what really happens is those kids that are kind of in between, they're delayed, but they're not delayed enough to really be eligible for services. Because
right.
like that previous mom, you know, what she said, or what she said her child, you know, had like a 30% delay or a 90% delay. You know, there are, every state has eligibility guidelines. And so you could still have a child that's below normal, below where you want him to be, but him not qualify for therapy. And we talked about that a couple of months ago when we were doing the show on interpreting standardized test results. Just because you don't qualify for services doesn't really mean that everything is moving along A-OK. Sometimes you're still kind of in that borderline group or the gap, you know, between normal and delayed enough to qualify. So if you have a kid in that situation, you really want to have them reevaluated, because that extra time really could make a difference. And if you've got the resources, you need to go ahead and have your child seeing somebody privately, even if you have to pay for it yourself, even out of pocket. You developmentally, you are going to be spending your money the best way possible by treating these kinds of issues early and not hoping and praying that he grows out of it. You know, you really need to be aggressive with that, even if that means that you have to forego other luxuries. You know, therapy should not be something that you're willing to just kind of wait and see on. If you have the resources to make that happen and you feel like your kid really needs it, you need to go ahead and do it. And no matter what your spouse says or grandma or even the pediatrician, you know, go ahead and get those problems addressed, because you're going to be spending your money wisely as far as your child's future is concerned. Okay, off the soapbox now.
Okay.
Let's get back to what we're talking about with receptive language. I'm going to zip through some of these skills. And, again, we've talked about some of these in the past few weeks in discussing our different parts of a speech, those different kinds of words, helping your child understand more pronouns and descriptive words and verbs and all those different parts of speech that you learned in school. So some of this might be a teeny bit repetitive tonight, but I am going to start zipping through these, because we want to finish these last five or six skills, and then we want to move on to have a really brief discussion of helpful disciplinary strategies for toddlers with language delays. And these are things that Kate and I use every day in therapy, because there's hardly a session where one of those little behavior issues doesn't crop up. So we're going to talk about how we handle those. And again, we're going to go super fast. So let's start with talking about how to help a child understand parts of an object. And again, that's on my language development test at the 27 to 30 month level. And that would mean that you would show a child a picture or a toy. Say if you have a house, you would say, show me the doors. Where's the window? Where's the light? You know, and your child would be able to pick out those real specific parts of that object. With the language test that I use, there's a picture of a dog and a picture of the car, and you say, where's the tail of the dog? Where's the door of the car? Where's the wheel of the car? Where's the nose of the dog? So, again, it's that your child is able to process that really specific part that you want him to understand. And the best way that I've found to teach parts of an object is to use what I call constructive toys, or that's where you have a toy where you might build the whole thing using different parts. Potato heads are a great example of that, you know, because you've got all those body parts that you work on, and you can really help a child see, you know, these are the eyes, and you put the eyes on, and then you put the nose on and the mouth, you know. So again, he's constructing the whole thing using parts of that object. So that's a good way to work on that kind of thing. You can also do it with any kind of little playground set that might be made of blocks. And Kate just got a new toy for her birthday that would be related
to
this.
You gave it to me. I've been using it.
I know. You give me great presents. I got that great purse for the DVD shoot and all the stuff. And I gave you a Dora playground. But I was excited
Dora
about
playground.
But again, with that, it's like it looks kind of like a Lego set, but it has those specific things, and you could really, when you're building that playground, you could say, oh, where's the slide? Let's find the swing. You know, and again, pick out those really specific parts of that whole object. And that's the best way that I teach that. Kate, do you have anything you want to add about that?
No, not really.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. We can move right along. But that's teaching parts of an object, and again, that involves doing lots and lots of labeling when you're looking at toys and looking at pictures, and you are pointing and labeling what that is. And again, that involves very specific teaching, for lack of a better word, and we talked about this a few weeks ago. That just means that you're going to say it, say it, say it, tell him, tell him, tell him, show him, show him, show him, over and over and over, so that he really learns those specific parts of that object. It's not just about calling it a car. You know, you also want him to have a word for the wheel and the light and the window and the door and the seat. So it's getting pretty specific about what you're teaching.
Okay, I will interject. The reason I was sighing, I was looking, even though you said you weren't going to ask me. I was going to say, oh, I think my test has that at 24 to 27 months. And it does, but I had to confirm it because I did not want to misspeak. So it's actually a little bit lower than yours. And I find that, again, just as we move from what's that, what's that, what's that, on to more in-depth types of questions, more detailed kinds of questions, we can lose kids or begin to realize they have receptive issues. This is another time when they might know the house and they might know the bear, but when you say, where's the bear's ear or where's the window on the house? A lot of times then you realize, oh, well, we're coming along, but we have a ways to go.
Right, and a kid might go, bear, when you say that. You know, where are the bear's ears? Bear! You know, where, you know, and really just label the whole thing rather than understanding what you're talking about. I do body parts a lot when we're playing with dolls. I think I play with baby dolls more than you do, Kate. But, you know, that's another time to work on that. And, again, those body parts really are parts of a whole. So that would be another way that you, especially if you have a kid that's not pointing to those body parts on himself, you could really teach that on you or on a doll or even on, like, a stuffed Elmo or something where he's really able to see those things. And that's along the same kinds of lines, you know, that understanding specific parts. Okay,
like
let's
do
keep
body
going.
Parts. Now, I've been doing babies a lot lately, and I do body parts a lot with babies when we're washing them. And
yeah.
I'll put powder, you know, powder in their eyes, powder on their belly, powder in
powder in their eyes? What kind of therapist are you?
Wash it, it hurts. Ow. Yeah, they like that. They laugh. But
I
it's a good way
laugh.
To make it obvious for, you know, okay, let's move towards the eyes here. But a lot of times they do better with body parts on something they can see as opposed to themselves. So,
right.
That's a good one.
It is a good one. All right, let's move on. The next skill is understanding object functions. And, again, this would be what an object is used for. And in the preschool language scale 4, how we test this is that there are 6 pictures on the sheet of paper, and it's shoes, a glass, a bike, a TV. I think there's, oh gosh, those are the one. And then there are 2 more pictures that you don't. I think it's a pan maybe and some scissors. And so you say, which one goes on your feet? And by 2.5, you would want a child to be able to know and point to the picture of the shoes. Which one do you ride? And the child would point to the picture of the bike. Which one do you watch cartoons on? I usually modify it and say, which one's for watching Elmo? Or where do you watch Dora? And the child would point to the TV. So, again, that's understanding what an object is used for. And that is a higher-level reasoning and language processing skill. And before you really start asking tons of those kinds of questions, you need to be sure that you've told them, you know, here are your shoes. Shoes go on your feet. Here's your cup. You drink from that. Your juice is in there. Here's your spoon. Your spoon is for eating. So that they learn to associate that use in that particular phrase and think about it in that way too. And it is really interesting that so many children will be able to readily identify those pictures, those common pictures, you know, shoes, a cup, a bike, the TV. But when you change it and ask it in that way that relates to the object's function, they're not able to do that. So you really sometimes do have to teach that.
Even though sometimes they seem to have an understanding of what that real object does. You know what I mean?
Right.
But when you give it verbally with just a picture, you can lose them on that.
Right, and I think when we were talking about this before, I do remember we talked about it in the last couple of weeks, because you said it's so interesting. You can have a baby's hat and say which one goes on your head, but a kid, you know, might not be able to answer that. But then you say, here's the baby's hat, and the kid plops it right on that doll's head.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows it, but that extra language is that is what's kind of gotten in the way there. And so you want to be sure that you're saying when you're playing, you know, there's the hat. The hat goes on her head. We wear hats on our head. You put the hat on your head. Now I'll put the hat on my head. And really kind of drive that point home and talk about it. You know, and we talked about the taglines from Teach Me to Listen and Obey One were tell him, show him, help him. And, again, you use those cues no matter what kind of word or what kind of concept that you're teaching a child to understand. You know, first you're going to tell him, then you'll show him, and then you'll help him do it. So that applies here a lot. And again, I can't emphasize how much you need to be talking about those kinds of things in your daily routines, you know, so that when you're giving your child a hairbrush, you know, oh, this is for brushing. Am I back? I think
you're
I muted
now.
Myself by accident. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, okay.
I'm doing the switchboard tonight. I'm sure we'll have all kinds of technical problems. Sorry about that.
Got the collar. I was impressed by that.
I know. I had help at that point, though.
Yeah, Laura, working on those things, and I think I've been doing this more because of watching your DVDs. Thank you very much. But before, kind of in between when I've played with it, and done lots of narrating about, oh, I want a drink. I need a cup. Baby needs a drink. Let's give her a cup, you know, so that we are kind of setting the stage for that comprehension on that. I do kind of once I'm past that and kind of wondering and seeing and feel certain the child probably wouldn't get it if I just asked a question, but I'll say, baby needs a drink. Should we use the cup or the shoe or the cup or the, and you kind of show each thing as you're doing it. So it's kind of a
right
intermediary step where you're giving them a choice of two, and I try and make one pretty obvious and one pretty silly or stupid.
And then you have the kids that think that's funny and always pick the wrong one. And I think, oh, you little stinker.
Yeah. Well, they want to see your exaggerated response, I'm sure.
No, we don't drink from a shoe.
Yeah. Ew, yucky. Yeah. But anyway, I just thought I'd put that in.
That's very good. That's a very good tip. And you are showing when you're doing that, you're giving them a visual cue to help a kid understand that when you're holding up both those things and talking about it. And I think humor is a great way to help teach those things. When they do make a wrong choice, you know, you're not really going to say, no, that's not it. You know, you're going to tease and, you know, like you said, no, the shoe, that's yucky. We don't drink from the shoe. Gross, yuck. You know, and again, bring humor in it and make it funny so that it's not as you're not making them feel inhibited from responding again or just not making it so cut and dried. I hate that when I see a parent do that or they get kind of frustrated or kind of mad when that happens instead of, you know, empathizing with the kid. Like, oh, you really don't get it. You really don't understand it. You know, this is my problem. I've got to teach, you know, rather than them getting mad or irritated because the kid has still not comprehended.
Right. And
okay. I teach, like with comprehension that we've talked about, you know, we've talked about using cleanup time for comprehension and saying when you have a whole set of toys out, you know, if you had a set of animals out, you would say, give me the cow, give me the pig, give me the horse as you're cleaning up. But you can do this with object functions too, and that's a different kind of way to ask it. You know, I want you to, let's clean up the one that you brush your hair with, or let's clean up the one that says moo, let's clean up the one that flies. You know, and again, you can do that with a puzzle, with just a group of toys that you've played with. So you can make cleanup time, bump that up a little bit too when you're working on receptive language and really use it for asking these kinds of object function things too. And when you have kids that are, you know, you'll know when it's too much because they get pretty frustrated and can't do it. Then I kind of think, okay, I've got to go back and spend some time really talking about this if they can't do it that well. But I found that that really does kind of let me know what they know and don't know. Do you know what I mean? When we're doing it in that context and it's just a straight question like that, then I feel like, gosh, when they've mastered it in that way, not even when we're using it, then they really know it and they own that information, like I was talking to that mom about a second ago.
Right. Well, in a word to wise on using that strategy, have the next toy that your child really loves, you know, up but out of the way so that he or she knows, oh, as soon as we get these put away, because sometimes just the idea of cleanup will kind of shut them down. But if they know, if you've done a puzzle and that might not be your child's favorite thing, but you really are working on receptive language skills and you want to see, how much of this would he understand? You know, make sure he knows that he's either getting some kind of treat or
right.
or his choo-choo trains that he loves or whatever it might be to motivate him, because nothing motivates a child like the next great toy or some fruit snacks or fish crackers or
whatever.
Right,
and you can do, and we're going to talk about this later, it's that first-then strategy. You know, first we clean up, then we have our snack. Or first we clean up, then we play choo-choos. And kids, again, once you're showing them that, and you, the words might not really mean, you know, they might not understand first and then right away. But once you've done that over and over and over and you're holding the next thing back kind of over your shoulder behind your back while you're pointing to what you really want them to get done.
Saying, wait!
Yeah, yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah, those are things we use all the time. Okay, moving right along. How to teach categories, and how this is on the test on the preschool language scale 4 is there are, say, about 9 pictures on the page, 9 or 10 pictures, and there'll be some clothes and some animals and some food, and that's what you say is show me all the things we eat, show me all the foods. And so the child is supposed to scan through the pictures and maybe point to the cake or the banana or the apple and really identify those things by their category of objects. And again, before you can do that, you have to make sure that you've been talking about, let's play with the food, let's get all the things we eat, and really introduce those category titles in that way so that that language is familiar to your child. I do with baby dolls, I use categories a lot because during cleanup, or even especially with kids maybe on the spectrum who like to group things, or kids that I think look a little obsessive compulsive already, the hoarders, you know, you can say, I'm going to get all the babies, I'm going to have all the babies, and before you know it, they're going to want all the babies, and so they're gathering, you know, if you've got lots of toys on the floor, you know, they're grabbing all the dolls up for themselves, and you think, gosh, they really understood that category. Or, I'm going to get all the clothes, I'm going to get all the things a baby would wear. And so a kid like that might start to grab those things. In the DVD, I taught it with baby dolls using, like, babies and the food and the clothes. I think I did one more example, but I cannot remember what that is. But with little boys, you might, if you have, say, cars and trucks out and blocks, you know, begin by separating those into categories. You know, let's get all the cars go here and blocks go here. And again, cleanup time is a great time to work on that because you can usually use different containers and there's kind of a natural sorting that would go on with that. So that's a good way that I've found to teach categories. Do you have anything to say about that, Kate?
I mean, I do pretty much same kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I think on your test, you probably have it a little earlier with finding an object that's like the one that you're holding. And I don't think I specifically have that on a language test. Isn't that on your
Yeah, I think there's, well, let me look. There's matching and sorting.
Yeah. And so you might hold up, you know, you might have several different items on the floor. I've been doing it lately with that great poo truck that you gave me with those little poo characters, and, you know, might hold up poo, and there, you know, there might be groups of, there's some poos and some tiggers and some piglets on the floor, and then they need to get all the poo, the ones that are Winnie the Pooh, and give them to me. You can do it like that, where you're matching like items, you know, and that would be a good way to start. And again, I think kids,
mine has that young, 15 to 19 months.
Yeah, and that really is the foundational skill, being able to find a like object, and then the categories where you sort out, you know, from 12 different objects, you know, that would be closer to where it is on my test, I think, and understanding the category name and it being, you know, done in a picture form versus
picture form,
an object.
Even
yeah.
harder, yeah. Yeah. Now, Lauren, when you said there that one on the PLS-4 and it had 9 pictures, I think you said, do you know? And
I think it's more like, I think it might be a little bit more than that. And that test is out in my car, so
okay.
I can't really look at it right now.
But, like, for a 3-year-old, do you know how many they should they be able to do them all?
You know, I think that there are 3 different categories, and I know it asks, there are 3 different categories and then 3 pictures per category.
Mm.
And I think a couple of extras are maybe
okay.
on that second page of that. But, you know, 9 or 10 pictures or even maybe more than that on one page, and you say find all the ones that you eat. You know, show me the things we wear. And then there's one, oh, show me all the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're supposed to look at all those pictures and kind of sort by that. But, and you know, a kid can't do that with pictures until he's really done it with objects. So you really want to teach it that way. And when I have kids miss that, you know, I start to really do that in play.
Mm-hmm.
I do it with farm sets, too. You know, let's put the animals right here, and we're going to put all the tractors over here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can group it that way. And the biggest thing, I think, too, is we're so focused on the specific label, you know, pig, horse, cow, but sometimes we forget to say animals.
Right.
And for kids with receptive language delays, you've got to go back and teach that darn category, too. So, again, you really want to think about how you are presenting the language that you give a child to be able to learn. That's kind of very, I think that's more for a therapist to think about than a mom. But there are so many moms now that really have done such a good job with taking on the responsibility or the bulk of the therapy time at home. So that's just something to think about.
Right. And
okay.
It is easy to assume that, well, surely he knows they're all animals because he knows the pig, the horse, the cow, and the dog, but he may not. So
yeah,
check and see. And if he doesn't, that just make a mental note that you're going to need to work that into your play routine so that next time you say, let's get the animals, he'll have a clue what you really mean.
Right. Okay, let's move right along. The next thing is negation, and that means understanding what something is not. Like, I'm not hungry, it's not raining. And first of all, kids have to have a pretty big vocabulary and understand the basic word. It's hard to understand not raining if you don't know what raining is, which one is not big if you don't understand what big is. So you have to make sure that your child is ready with a pretty big vocabulary and a pretty pretty extensive understanding of lots of different kinds of words before you start to work on this. And I disagree with that therapist who told you a couple of weeks ago, Kate, that just because a child says no or not, that they necessarily understand negation.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what I'm talking about?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes kids will kind of pick up that no, and a therapist will be fooled thinking just because a child responds no to something or I'm not, that they understand that whole negation concept. And, you know, you can teach this again in play. On the test, let me tell you how it is on my language test. There's a picture of, like, 5 babies, and all the babies are crying except one, and you say, which baby is not crying? Then the next page, there's a row of nests with chickens above them, and all the nests have eggs in them except one, and you say, which nest has no eggs? And the next page is a picture of toys in a basket, and then there are a couple little toys in front of the basket, and you say, which toys are not in the basket? So that's the goal, to be able to understand those things. So, again, before kids can understand it in pictures, they have to be able to understand it in real life. So you set up situations like that where you're talking about what something's not doing. I have lots of different toys that I teach that with, that little poo set that I've been using. Some of those little characters have hats, and so I might say, which one is not wearing a hat? Some have glasses, you know, so you do the same thing. if you have a kid that's really hooked on colors and colors are kind of his thing, you might say, you know, which one is red, now which one is not red, and teach it that way too.
You know, when you talk about that PLS-4, Laura, I think of some of my little kids that I work with or have worked with, and I go, oh.
Yeah, they're not going to get that for a long time, are they?
They're going to get them. Oh.
I know, when it's with pictures, and that's
mm-hmm.
what's so
yeah,
hard.
Yeah, great, with pictures. Mm.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, but if you do not understand it with real objects, there's no way you're going to get it from a picture. So what a kid can't do on a test, you know, I think, okay, what does this mean in real life? How can I go back and teach this?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole not hungry or not sleepy, you can teach it with that. And, you know, use baby dolls to do that. Wah, 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 this baby's crying. She's hungry. She's hungry. She's hungry. Which baby's not hungry? Oh, this one's not hungry. She's not crying. You know, so you can really work it in there. And I think when I'm teaching not in negation, I'm constantly shaking my head no.
Yeah.
Because that really, again, is giving that whole verbal message. And negation is hard. It's hard to teach.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to help a kid kind of understand that. I think sometimes they just, you know, developmentally the switch just turns on, because I'll work on it for a long time and think, oh, my gosh, there's no way. He has no clue what this is. And then one day they just get it. Which is how it's supposed to happen. But it's kind of a hard thing to teach. And there are examples of teaching negation on Teach Me to Listen and Obey 2. And I think that might have been one of the clips that I used on the website. So you can look that up. It's under the category. It says DVD, and just kind of skim down the page to get to Teach Me to Listen and Obey 2. And you can see the clips right there for some more examples of how to teach that. Okay, inferences. This means understanding something that's not necessarily obvious, and children are supposed to be able to do this right at 3 or between 3 and 3.5. And we talked about this a little bit when we were talking about those descriptive words or physical state words, you know, hungry, sleepy, that kind of thing. And again, it's kind of that early predicting. And on the test, how this is that there will be 3 pictures, and one is a picture of like a sunny day, and then one is a picture of a rainy day, and then one is a picture of maybe I think it's a sunny day, but the pictures have changed, or, you know, the objects there have changed or something. And this is the prompt. It says, Charlie got his shoes wet when he played outside. What do you think it was like outside? And they point to the rain. And it's amazing when a kid, you know, who's not struggling with language, boy, they can do it right away. And then our little guys who've really struggled to understand.
Yeah, I'm really cringing on that one.
Yeah. It's hard, isn't it? That's
yeah.
a hard concept to be able to know. His shoes were wet, so aha, it must be raining. You know, really, that's pretty abstract.
And yet, I think my kids, I mean, thinking out loud, I think of my classically apraxic kids whose receptive skills are at age level, they'd get that quickly.
Yeah, because they'd make
point and smile and go, I know. They might not be able to say it, but they would know it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, and again, your child has to have a pretty big vocabulary and a pretty good handle on understanding lots of different kinds of words before they're ever able to do that. And again, that's on the test. I believe it's right at 36 months, but it could be a little bit higher than that, but right at 3 is when they're supposed to be making those inferences and understanding. And again, this goes back to really giving your child explanations of what you're doing and why you're doing it. You know, it's cold today. We need to wear a coat because you'll be too cold when you go outside if you don't have something to keep you warm. Your coat keeps you warm, you know, and really taking the time to explain, and go ahead and give that little definition. And the part that gets me is being too wordy even when I'm teaching it. You know, so I really have to kind of think, what am I going to say? What does he understand? What's a word he already knows that can help him kind of anchor this concept? So, again, it's really giving your child lots of opportunities to hear those kinds of that kind of reasoning or higher level thinking. And you have to go out of your way to really talk about it, but not in a way that's over his head.
And you've said it already, but just to reiterate, I think baby play or playing with characters or some kind of, you know, animal, it's the easiest to work those things in because they can talk about that. You know, it's hard
right.
to play as a mommy or a therapist and do those things. I mean, I do it kind of myself, but it's always kind of through a baby or through I love the
right.
loving family people and, you know, those things. They say it's cold. They need their coat ooh, or their blankie or whatever it is.
Yeah, or
over
he's
and
so
over
tired.
And over and over.
Yeah. He's sleepy, so sleepy. What should we do? What should we do? You know, and kids really get into that. And, you know, the whole, and you can see their little body language, and they start to furrow their little brows like, oh, we have a problem. How are we going to solve this? You know, and they really get into that kind of play, and you've got to really help give them the words to support what you're talking about and what that higher level thinking or language processing is. Okay, let's move on to talking about quantity. And, you know, quantity words, and I'm not just talking about counting because I think that's what people naturally assume is that we're going to teach kids to understand 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, that's a pre-academic skill, and yes, before kids go to kindergarten, we really do want them counting, but is that so important at 2 when they don't understand, are you thirsty, do you want a drink? No, you know, I wouldn't say counting is that important, but we do really want them to understand differences in quantity words like one cookie versus all the cookies, or let's get some more, you know, those kinds of quantity words. And, again, those are on my language test between 3 and 3.5. And the way to teach a kid that is just to tell him and show him and then help him understand it. And you want to do that over and over and over. And the words that are on the test that kids need to be able to differentiate between are one, all, few, many, and some. And I think they have to get 2 out of those 5. And the 2 that kids usually get are 1 versus all. And I think we, to teach that, I really just emphasize the word all. Let's clean up all the blocks or give me just 1, you know, really in contrast with that difference between 1 versus all. And I bet that's on your cognitive test earlier than it would be on my test. I think the reason it's so late on my test is because they've thrown those other harder words in there.
Yeah, few, hoo-wee.
Yeah.
Well, mine specifically talks about understanding the number concepts of 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And I think 1 is 24 to 27 months and 2 is maybe 27 to 30 months. I don't know.
Yeah, it's right around there. Yeah, and I do think kids of a typically developing language pick that up pretty early. And we do have some kids that do just kind of gravitate toward those numbers and letters and counting. But even if they're counting by rote, you know, 1, 2, 3, go, or even a kid that might count, you know, to 10 because he's heard it, or if he has kind of a visual fascination. One of our little guys, Kate, that barely talks, saw a clock this week and counted to 10 just beautifully looking at all those numbers. But if I said to him, you know, if I had a set of cars out, and I said, give me just 1 car, he would have a hard time understanding car, much less 1, even though, you know, he just counted perfectly between 1 and 10.
Let me see who that might be. Actually, I'm going to correct myself. Understands concept of 1, 24 to 30 months. Understands concept of 2, 30 to 36 months.
Yeah.
So.
Either way, before you're 3.
Right.
Understanding the difference between 1 and 2. And there are tons of opportunities to teach that during the day. You know, when you, again, food is the most logical thing. Your kid wants 5 cookies and you tell them, just one. We're having 1 cookie. 1, 1, 1. you know, so that's one way to make that real.
Don't you have a lot of kids who say 2 pretty quickly?
2. Yeah. They know it means more than I'm getting.
That's
yeah.
right. Occasionally I'll get one who will blurt out 3, and I think, oh, pretty smart. You got that. But 2 is a big one.
And talking about apraxic kids, I have some apraxic kids that will, with twinkly eyes, say something like 5 or,
yeah.
you know, blurt out something. They don't really, they probably do understand, but they
yeah.
understand 5 is a heck of a lot more than 1. So they do that, and it's very cute. And I ask kids a lot, do you want 1 cheese ball or 2? Usually because I'm trying to get, you know, for me, that initial T sound, if we're working hard on consonants.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can teach that pretty well, too. Have one cheese ball in one hand and two cheese balls in the other hand. And it doesn't take hardly any kid a long time to catch on to saying
two.
Yeah. Yeah, they pop that right out. So that's a good way to teach that, too. Or, you know, and if you have a kid that's really struggling with that, you know, I might have M&Ms or Skittles or something and say, do you just want one or do you want all of them? And that's an easy way to teach that, too, because then you say, I want all, and you rake up all those M&Ms and pop them all in your mouth. And, you know, they're sitting there looking like, what happened? You know, and then you do it again. Do you want one or do you want all? Well, you know, if they can even sort of get out that vowel sound, they're going to try to say all after you've done that three or four times. So that's kind of a fun one to teach.
If you like M&M's.
What?
If you like M&M's.
Yeah. Who doesn't like M&M's?
I like them, just the baby ones, though. I'm picky about my M&M's.
Oh, that is funny. And on this, I can't have those if I'm doing no carbs, but that's a whole different show. Okay, we're down to about 4 minutes left in the show. Not really enough time to talk about this disciplinary stuff, but we are not going to carry this over until next time, because I really want us to move on to talk about other things. But on Teach Me to Listen and Obey 2, that is really a long, long DVD. It's right at 2 hours. And the whole first part talks about what we've been talking about over the last few weeks with understanding lots of different kinds of words and all the concepts we talked about tonight. And then the whole last 45 minutes or so is devoted strictly to disciplinary stuff. And the reason that I did that is so many people misunderstand children with receptive language delays and really inadvertently think that those children are misbehaving or deliberately disobedient, when the real problem is those kids do not understand what they've been told to do. And I've got a little guy on my caseload now who's a new kid for me, who's turning 3 in May, and it just totally breaks my heart that I haven't had more time with him. But that is so what's going on with his preschool teachers, because he has this whole classroom of children who are average or above average and really are pretty compliant, and he looks like a hellion compared to them because they give him these long instructions and he falls apart. He doesn't know what they're talking about, or else he does the first part of it and just kind of wanders off and does his own thing. And they really have missed the boat into thinking that, gosh, he doesn't understand me. They've, you know, because all the other 18 kids in the class are able to do it the first time or second time they're told, you know, they've really not understood that he's not understanding. And he's a kid that talks. And so that, again, is very deceptive, because you think, gosh, if he can say it, he certainly understands it. And, you know, nothing could be further from the truth for this little guy. And so I explained that to them a couple weeks ago. And this week when I saw them, they said, you know, we have really been noticing that. If we just tell him one thing, he can do it. But if you tell him more than one thing, or if we tell the whole group, he can't get it. We really have to get down and tell him exactly what we want him to do. And I think, oh, progress. You know, and again, it's not with the kid. It's with the teachers just kind of changing what they've done. But they are starting to kind of look at him in a whole new light. And I'm so glad that I've been able to help them see that and see that he's not just being bad. You know, he truly doesn't understand what they're saying. But the whole last half of Teach Me to Listen and Obey 2 is about how to handle those common disciplinary things. It's there's a list of guidelines for how to use timeout with a language delayed kid and what makes sense to use for them. And, you know, and it talks too so much about that you have to modify your expectations for these kids. And you have to think about them with the same age level that they understand, not necessarily their chronological age. So if you have a 3-year-old who really is functioning more like an 18-month-old, you've got to discipline him like he's an 18-month-old, not like he's a 3-year-old. And I think that's hard for parents to understand. And then some parents really get caught up in, but if I don't treat him like he's 3, he's never going to act like he's 3. Mm. And I always say, yeah, but that's like, you know, and I've used this example before, that's like saying, okay, I expect you to know how to tie your shoes, or I expect you to go out there and drive that car or ride that bike. You know, he's just not ready yet. And so you expecting him to do it, you know, doesn't account for all those months and months and skills and skills and skills that he's got to learn to have the foundation to be able to do those things. So you really, really need to think about what, where your child is functioning, and then find the disciplinary techniques that experts recommend for that age. And I've got some good guidelines on the DVD. I welcome you to check that out. And I think that's about all I'm going to say about that. But there's some good examples on there. I have some of my kids on there that I didn't set out to make all the disciplinary strategies or techniques fit. If I didn't have a good example, I just kind of talked about it and told you how I handle those things or how experts would say to handle those things without purposefully setting out to annoy children to make them get in trouble. But some things did arise that we're I was able to show you in that context. So if you're having those kinds of issues and if you feel like you need some help, please, please, please take a look at that DVD and hopefully you'll get some new ideas to use at home to make that go a little bit better for you. And especially if you're a therapist, if you feel like you're struggling and you're having lots of power struggles in your therapy sessions, you know, chances are the problems aren't with the kids, they're with you. And so you need to change your techniques.
Can I repeat that?
Yeah. If you're spending all day long thinking every kid you see is bad, the problem is probably not the kids. The problem is probably you.
And
so you need to readjust how you handle that and how you, what your expectations are, and get some more effective techniques. And I, as a mom and as a therapist, and I've done this for a long time now, spent a lot of time really researching that and thinking about that and how to present that in the context of using it with language-like kids. So feel free to check that out.
And in no way is she saying you're not supposed to discipline them, but just make it appropriate. Cause
yeah.
It's so funny, Laura, because I think you're really kind of a disciplinarian, and sometimes you, not that you mean to or that that's your position, but sometimes it sounds like you're saying, oh, they're too strict, and that's not really what you're saying at all. You're just saying your specific child doesn't really understand what you're asking of him or her.
Right,
and so let's modify that so that they're able to understand, and you know, then you set reasonable expectations for their behavior. But
right, and I am not, I mean, that's funny that you think that I'm a disciplinarian and stuff, but I'm not a push-up, you know, that's funny, because some people, I guess if they heard that, oh, like I got bad emails when I named the DVD Teach Me to Listen and Obey, because one person in particular was very upset that I would use the term obey, because that felt like I, you know, was being really hard-nosed about it. But then sometimes I think, you know, you can go the other way too and think, oh no, she's a pushover. She doesn't think he should have any expectations. I feel like I am right there in the middle. You just have to be able to make the discipline or whatever behavior approach, for lack of a better word, you use fit the skills of your particular child or, you know, fit his developmental level.
And we do see so often kids who, you know, parents make the leap from thinking he knows that's a ball to knowing that he's not supposed to throw the ball on the wall because I told her that it could break the picture. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Like, big leap there. Big leap. And we do.
Yeah.
You know, it. We love every kid we work with, really, and it's hard to see that and think he doesn't get it. He really doesn't understand what you just said to him. And parents.
Yeah, and you know, you really have to have, if you're a therapist listening, you have to have frank discussions with parents about that, because guess what? If you don't tell them, the parents don't know. They really don't know. They don't put that together. And sometimes those are the most uncomfortable conversations, I think, that I have with parents, is being able to, in a kind and gentle way, say, Mom, we've got to do something about your expectations here,
mm-hmm.
because you are requiring way more than this kid is going to be able to do. And you're going to spend the whole day here really trying to do things that are so frustrating, not only for him, but for you. You know, let's talk about how we can bring this down a notch or two and make life easier for everybody. And he'll eventually get there where he understands that kind of thing. But for some kids, especially, you know, kids who are pretty significantly delayed, you really do just have to kind of think, how am I going to modify the environment, or how am I going to change what I'm doing so this isn't a big deal anymore? So anyway, that's all on the DVD. Feel free to check that out. And I did want to mention, too, Teach Me to Talk, the DVD, is on major sale right now on the website. So if you've been wanting to order that and haven't been able to do so, now would be the time to do it. I am changing the cover and getting that ready to go into retail spaces. And so I want to get rid of all these extra covers that we've printed for that. So you'll get the original cover, but that's going on sale for $19.99, and it's going to last as long as I have these covers. So check out the website and get that special coupon code to be able to do that.
Cool.
All okay. Right. Next week we're going to start talking about a subject near and dear to Kate's heart, choosing the right daycare or preschool. Get ready for
Kate.
A mother
who never put her kid in a daycare? Yeah, that's really near and dear to my heart. I did go to a really nice one this week, so.
Oh, did you? Do you want to share with me what that is?
I told you, one associated with the University of Louisville, and it was like Shangri-La. I said, I just want to videotape this so that people can see that there really are good daycare. It was unbelievable.
Well, you be prepared to talk about that in depth next Thursday night, 6 o'clock, and we look forward to having everybody back here then. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye.